This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 880, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Days like a me, huh?
My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
Hi.
And joining us this week in the third chair is Dr. Ryan Haupt.
Hi. I'm trying to match Josh's energy. Is it working?
And welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 880. I am hungover, so let's push through.
You used to say that, and it would be like, it's funny, and you'd be okay. And now you say it, it's like, oh, it's not, I can't.
I just want to go to sleep.
Right.
I just want to go to sleep. Welcome to your 40s when hangovers last for more than one day. Every week, one of us picks the book they like the best from the stack of comics they read. And that's this week, that stack was tiny. We'll call that the pick of the week. We're going to talk about that book and other books from the week. The patron pick. The listener mail, if we have time. The patron powers. All of it. We do all of it here and more. Here's your spoiler warning. Exercise some caution. Ryan, you had the pick this week.
If this was a video podcast, you would have seen my eyes go very wide because I just remembered the patron power exists.
Yes.
First time I've thought.
It's always nice when you know you don't have to do it. Not that it's not fun. It's, it means you got to think of it.
Not you, as nice you got when lucky, you though, because you heard it now.
I got lucky?
Right. Yeah, but like it's when surprise. It's. When they say your name right when you're supposed to, and that's when you recognize it, that's a good time.
It's like when you get called out in high school because you haven't done the reading.
Or you just weren't, you were just off.
Just not paying attention.
Yep.
Oops. Anyway, Ryan.
The pick of the week this week was Nightwing, number 104, story by Tom Taylor, art by Travis Moore, colors by Andriano Lucas, and letters by Wes Abbott. This is the finale of this story with Blockbuster's daughter, but really I think the thing that made me interested based on the cliffhanger from last issue was Dick Grayson being given superpowers by Neron, one of the lords of the underworld, and
one of the many devils.
It's never entirely clear what exactly his superpowers are, but he's basically Kryptonian. He's a Superman level being.
It's like Cosmic Spider-Man kind of thing.
Yeah,
like he does all the stuff.
He can fly. He's got speed. He's got all that stuff. Before we get into
new
that,
costume.
Is this new on the cover where there's the Batman logo? Is that a new thing?
You tell me.
Are they like branding the families?
It's not a terrible idea.
I didn't even notice that till right now. Yeah. But just curious. I didn't remember seeing that before, but it could have been there the whole time, and I just never noticed it. Anyway, Ryan, keep going.
So this issue, Nightwing kind of explores what it might be like to be a superhero rather than just a hero with a complete suite of powers while also sort of
he's super. He's a superhero.
He doesn't have any super abilities. The
powers don't make a superhero a superhero.
I don't know if I agree with that.
He fights crime.
He's a hero.
Yeah, but he's a superhero.
You don't have to agree with it, but you.
And they also sort of resolve the situation with Blockbuster's daughter, and she ends up joining the Themyscirans with the codename Nightbuster, sort of a combo of her dad and Nightwing. And I thought the resolution was fine, but also I think I was also just relieved to be done with that particular story arc. And yes. And getting back to, this has almost really become a Loki Titans book, which we've talked about a little bit, but it's interesting. It, you know, it's all, I think Dick Grayson works really well when juxtaposed against the larger DC universe. And so to see him, you know, flying as fast as Wally can run and going up into space with Superman, like there were some nice character beats. There were some nice interpersonal moments juxtaposed with, you know, I don't think there was ever any real dilemma as to whether or not Nightwing would accept these superpowers in return for Blockbuster's daughter's soul. So like that, there, I felt no real sense of drama there, but it was just a nice sort of wrap up issue to a couple different storylines that have been going. And I thought the costume redesign was a fun riff on Nightwing's costume. And I kind of enjoyed, out of all the books I read this week, I just enjoyed watching Nightwing fly around the DC universe, hanging out with folks and seeing what it's like to have superpowers.
Yeah. I haven't loved this whole arc, and I'll be happy when the Titans, you know, move to their old book and it says at the end here to be continued to Titans number one. So obviously there's a little bit of scheduling delay here, but I love the Titans. I liked the story and the characters and what we were doing within the Nightwing book before the Titans took over for the last couple of issues. So I'll be happy to switch that over to another book and go back to Dick and Barbara and all their friends. However, this was the best issue of the arc because of what you said, Ryan. It was seeing Dick get to explore life as basically Superman Jr., yet another Superboy. And especially when they were together, because it was, as I said, one of their favorite relationships is the Dick Superman relationship, how he's like, you know, his favorite uncle situation. And it was nice to see him, you know, fly up and say, hey, I just wanted to see what it was like, you know, to be like you and shake his hand in the sky. And then I really like the speech of Superman about the Earth. You know, they fly up to space and tells him about, you know, the pressures he feels and the things that are important and the perspective he gets from being above, you know, out in space and looking at the Earth from afar. I thought that was all really good.
Would this have been your pick too, Connor? Or did you not think about that this week?
I didn't think about it this week, but I don't know. Maybe.
It's interesting because Connor, obviously this isn't going to be your favorite flavor of Nightwing because it's kind of the DC demon universe or whatever. And Neron has been like omnipresent for a character that like is barely defined and I can't imagine what he cares about. But I do like the versatility of the character in that you can do this kind of story because I think, you know, the book would be boring if it was always the street level criminal and heart taker or whatever. Yeah. And then you have because he's tying in that Titans thing, you always have Raven there. So you've got that little bit, you know, which is a juxtaposition, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, it got to be, at least it was unexpected, I suppose. And you got all those moments and, you know, Tom Taylor, he does the relationship heartstrings, you know, but like not like Garth Ennis does relationship heartstrings, but Tom Taylor's got a real handle on like what two characters to put together and make them do that. And I feel like they're actually kind of overusing the Superman Dick Grayson thing, but I don't care because it's enjoyable. It's like it's too much, but until it sucks, I'm not really going to complain.
It's probably because you're reading World's Finest and they're two or three main characters.
And I don't. There. Yeah. I sort of just the feeling of it rather than me being able to give you the examples of the whole thing. It's fine. It's good.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing that's super enjoyable. You know, it's as Ryan said, it's like giving a character a different power set. And so they get to explore for one issue what, you know, life on the other side is like. And
Ryan's not wrong though. Like there was no drama to that.
No, he was never going to keep the powers. Of course not.
And it's almost like it's so obvious. You're like, why is this demon so stupid?
Yeah.
Like, that's what you thought you'd tempt him with?
Did Neron ever thought he had the upper hand here?
Like, bring his parents back to life or, you know.
Get rid of Damian.
He might go for it.
I would go for it.
Well.
You know what's funny, and this has nothing to do with the main story, but the backup story, which is like a flashback to Dick teaming up with John Kent to solve a murder at the circus.
Are we sure it was John Kent?
Well, that's what I'm laughing about, because it's like ever since they outed him as bi. He's bi, right? He's gay? Bi? I
don't remember. No, he's bi. He's bi.
It's like the artists don't know what to do with his hair. They want to give him like Gen Z hair, but they don't know what that means. And so sometimes it's like weird mohawk, and sometimes it's this curly, almost 70s boy band hair. Like they just that they're trying to. It's like they're, like well, it's like
they need a character model.
This is not me saying it, but this is like the idea I get reading is like, well, what do the gays have? Like, what are their hairs like? What is their hair like? You know,
in this story, Dick has similarly length. Like his hair is about as long as John's, but is coiffed in a way that doesn't look just scraggly.
Like there's one page 27, where it's just like, who is this person?
You know, I mean, like what you're saying is perfectly valid. But I think the other problem with this story is that I was like, this isn't even his face. This isn't his face from the last panel.
Yeah, the art was bad.
And I do think that there's a little confusion with the fact that it was Action
Comics.
Look at
28. Like, what is that?
It was Action Comics this week, and there's all the different Supermans, and John's costume doesn't seem to be consistent, and so I don't ever know who I'm looking at. Like, I'm like, wait, is this a different one, or not? Actually, this one is consistent, but it's not the same as the one in Action Comics, I don't think.
Yeah.
And in this, he's drawn with more or less an adult form. Like, he's as big as Nightwing, but he's written to be very kind of naive in an almost childlike way, which was a little, it was just inconsistent with the way the character looked.
They made him look like the alien from space who's fascinated by humans.
They really did. I mean, that's right. Yeah.
28 is terrible. And then you turn the page to 29 and it looks like he's got like a human mask on in that first panel. Like nobody takes it off and sees my alien face.
It just was weird. It's just funny. Like they just, it's just like, how do we signify this guy is not a straight man? Let's give him different hair and we're going to do it differently every time. It's just someone needs to get a hold of
Dick's hair is fairly consistent with the length in the main book, I think. Although the very first page of the story, it's got a real page boy thing going on. Cause this guy's no, Bruno Redondo.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a matter of like,
in a while.
I know, but like he's still established that look or whatever. Yeah, this one looks like he got out of the shower and then blow dried it. Actually, it's terrible. The thing here, my real issue is like this art is, it's not ready for prime time. And I get it. It's a backup story on a sort of mid-tier book. But like sometimes you just like you look at it and it's like you're not quite there. Yeah. And you know, editors have drastically different ways about going after, doing their jobs and telling people what to do or not. But if like, I wish the editor had gone, you got to fix this.
Yeah.
You know, and there's probably not time for it. It doesn't work that way. They roll the dice when they put somebody on a story and they give somebody a chance or whatever. And you know, this artist, if they keep working, they'll get better. It's not terrible at all. Just needs a little work, a little polish, you know, it's not prime time. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Hey, Ryan, this is a fun issue. I, when you sent the list over, I said, yeah, that makes sense.
I have no idea what my pick of the week would have been.
Yeah, I don't either. It was such a small week. I ended up having 12 books with the patron pick, and I don't know. I'm just glad it was you and not me.
I think I know what my pick of the week is. We'll get to it.
Let's move on to Action Comics, as you mentioned. Action Comics 1055. And yeah, it has a Superman logo on the cover, so I guess they're branding the books.
I mean, not a terrible idea.
Now watch, someone's going to be like, they've been doing that for 8 months, and you idiots just noticed now. That's probably what's going to happen.
Yeah, but would you be like, somebody would call you an idiot, would you be like, I'm not an idiot? You'd be like, yeah, okay.
No, I'd be like, yeah, that's fair.
Okay. I have no argument about that.
I think I had the same problem. First of all, I liked this because it's like, you know, we're everyone knows we're in peak 90s nostalgia mode in this culture. I mean, I was out at lunch today and they were playing the 90s station in the restaurant. Like we're in peak 90s, 90s nostalgia. And so here we have the return of all of the Superman from the Death of Superman. So we have Cyborg Superman, we have the Eradicator, we have Steel, we have Superboy, and
two,
Superman.
We have two Steels.
Yeah, but we have basically everyone back together. And I was really kind of bummed there was not a single shot of them all together, because that would have been a panel of the week, but there wasn't one. So
I was pretty excited to see Eradicator.
Yeah, I mean, they're good characters, and there's a reason why they have staying power, you know. Eradicator and Cyborg Superman are kind of creepy.
I will say, like, at the end of the last issue, when, you know, it's revealed that it's Cyborg Superman, I was like, all right. Because Cyborg Superman is one of those characters that, like, if you don't know anything about the character, it sounds kind of dumb.
Right.
But he's scary.
Yeah.
Like, he's got the menace of threat, and he's crazy, and he looks like Superman, but, you know, but not. And it's a great villain, and to sort of have it think that we're looking at Metallo, but it's not. By the way, Metallo's origin story in the middle of here for no reason was dumb, but I loved it. You know what I mean? I was like, this is terrible, but I'm into it.
Well, and the thing about Cyborg Superman is, you know, if you read the death and then the return of all the Supermen and the reign of the Supermen, like, Cyborg Superman was the one guy who almost kind of convinced Lois that he might be really Clark. And yeah. So, like, there's that, to mm-hmm. me, gives him a level of threat that none of the other, you know, faux Superman ever achieved.
I really do love that his name is Hank Henshaw. And, like, that name, which sounds like just some boring ass suburban neighbor,
yeah.
is evil in DC. Oh, fuck. But it also, Hank Henshaw.
It also sounds like a name Stan Lee would have come up with, yeah. to be alliterative, yeah. so he could remember it.
Yeah.
But overall, though, I mean, that aside, it's kind of what you mentioned earlier, Josh. I still have my problem with this book. There's just too many characters, and they're too similar, and they redesigned all these costumes to look exactly the same.
So start of the book, I see there's all the different Supermen, and I forget which one's which. And I was like, all right, this Action Comics. And I was like, I don't know who's anybody anymore. And I hate that, like, I'm sorry, but the Chinese Superman does not read as Chinese at all. And yeah. so every time I have to be like, who is that?
Right.
Well, because now he's just speaking in pop culture quips and they're just saying, oh, yeah that's because of movie night or game night. And it's like, yeah. all right, that's one way to not write the character as authentically their own culture, I guess.
He had a very specific sort of red costume from that book when Gene Yang right. introduced him.
Oh, totally.
I would yeah. know who that is every time.
Yeah, and it's not like Superman and Superboy, who originally had the exact same costume. You could just tell one was mm-hmm. a mini version. But now it's just like they put them all in these similar jackets. Then they all have the same logos in the same spots. And so they're all vaguely white guys with black hair. And it's just like, who are all these people?
And the thing with Jonathan Kent is, in his own book, they've been hinting at this idea that he's going to become the Electric Blue Superman.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just do that, because that would be a great way to visually distinguish him.
Yeah.
So this is him with the...
He's got sort of the lightning bolt S symbol and no cape anymore.
Red sleeves and the black uniform.
Yeah, kind of the gray black uniform. And then
he looks exactly like Clark Kent. He doesn't look younger. Yeah. He's got short hair, obviously. Like, it is... You could never convince me that that's supposed to be the same character in the other book that we just read.
Yeah, I mean, this might be a good chance to bring over the Diego Maradona haircut he had in that other book and have him be recognizable on his own. Yeah, there's just it's just too many. I mean, it's a comical. There's two Steels. There's five mm-hmm. Supermen in this book.
And plus,
Supergirl would be recognizable, but she's got the same exact costume as everybody else. Mm-hmm. It's just weird. They're doing this.
At least I know which the younger Steel is. That I got. I'm down with that. I have no idea who the fuck she is. Like, I think she's his niece. So, yeah. I don't know.
Natasha Jones. Yeah, I think she's
whatever.
She wears a hoodie. Yeah,
you know.
And then you have the kids. I keep forgetting the kids are there. Yeah. And the kids show up, and I'm like, "There's 19 characters in this book."
Hey, you know what was awesome? What they did over in Fantastic Four. Let's do exactly the same thing.
Just time jump them for a year.
Exactly the same.
Yeah, it's the same characters.
There's even Crypto just hovering in a panel at one point. Like,
I know who that is.
Crypto, you can tell.
All of this aside, like, these are all faux pas. And
I would just say, also, annoying. Now you're adding in Cyborg Superman, who also wears the same costume as, and it looks exactly like Superman. So you're adding even more characters to the mix.
Maybe that's the joke. You know what I mean? Like, maybe that's like, would it be funny if we just fucking filled it with Superman in Action Comics? Like, I can get behind that.
Next month, Bizarro.
So all that said, though, like, it's pretty good.
It is pretty good.
All of those faults, I am engaged. I there was a bunch of books this week that were, I was behind on, so I had to read two books to sort of catch up. And, you know, like, I finished the last Action Comics, and, you know, it was the reveal of Hank Henshaw, and I was like, all right, let's do more. You know, like, I was into it.
Yeah.
I'm a little into the Lee Weeks Jonathan Kent story. It's not great, but
I'm
whatever.
More into it when he draws it. He hasn't drawn the last couple.
I thought his name was on the one. Yeah, okay. Yeah. And then that last story I got to a page that was just a boardroom and a fuck ton of word balloons, and I was like, I'm out. Like, that's all it took.
Yeah, and also this was similar to Nightwing's backup, where the art in this backup, the Steel Starter, was not ready for prime time either.
No. So that was a little. That was a large up and down review. this was awesome, but it sucked. But it was awesome.
But I don't I don't know who anyone is, and I don't know what's going on. But it was awesome.
True. And there's a lot of super people.
Yeah.
The Tim Drake book doesn't have the Batman logo on it. What is happening?
Well.
Yeah, and yes, I'm still reading Tim Drake. There's only one issue left. Daredevil and Echo, number one. I wasn't originally going to read it. It's clearly just a book they're putting out to capitalize on the Echo show that's coming out. But I saw that Phil Noto drew it.
Yeah.
The writer was Taboo and B. Earl are two native writers who I haven't really seen do.
I remember those names. I think they wrote something else we read at some point.
And this was really fun.
Yeah.
It involves parallel storytelling where, you know, in the present day, Daredevil and Elektra and Echo are dealing with this problem. But in the past, in
1835,
Jack Murdock, who is, you know, Matt's descendant, you know, ancestor, has left the gang life. He's left the Dead Rabbits behind to go way up north to...
Wait, Tommy Murdock.
Tommy Murdock, sorry, yeah. Jack was his
father? Jack is his dad, yeah. Battling Jack Murdock, yeah.
Well, he's also Jack's ancestor. So he leaves the gang life and the Five Points behind to go way up north to Hell's Kitchen to become a priest. But there's a problem. And I thought this was really, really fun. I mean, the stories are connected, obviously, but...
Right, the native people, like Echo's ancestors, are also part of this story with the same handprint on her face.
I thought this was cool. I mean, I just finished reading a book that was took place in historical New York, and so I've got this sort of world in my mind. I think it's so hilarious that in the 1830s, you know, what was essentially like 55th Street was like considered, like Canada, basically. Like it was so far
everything
away.
Everything about 14th Street was just... crazy far away.
Yeah, and they talk about the old pond, which was where the water the collect pond, everybody got their water from, and they filled it in, of course. And anyway, I thought this was really fun. I really enjoyed this, and I love seeing Phil Noto's interiors.
I'm a big fan of Phil Noto, and I think he's really improved in sort of making stuff look more like drawings instead of photos. But the only thing that I will say is that his 1835 New York, way too clean.
Well, yeah,
Like everything is sort of really nice, and did they have like I don't know 4 or 5 story buildings back then?
4 and 5, I don't know, but
yeah. Anyway,
was this before or after the big fire that took out all the wood buildings and they replaced them with stone? I can't remember.
The Triangle Shirtwaist fire was
no. This was a different fire. This was the one that spread throughout the basically transitioned it from a village of wood structures to a city of stone structures.
It happens in all the great cities.
Yeah.
Every great city's burned at least once.
Right. English usually speaking. Somebody said it so the other they can ones. Rebuild. So anyway, I thought this was good. I thought if you're interested in Daredevil, like this was a nice diversion into more of a classic Daredevil story. We've been talking about the Chip Zdarsky book for a while. That's a very specific story. This is more, it takes elements that you recognize, like Elektra being in the Daredevil costume, but it, you know, he doesn't have a beard. He's not like cripplingly depressed.
He's in his regular suit.
Yeah. So, well, yes, he has the ninja pants, which is from Chip's run, but
that's been that way for years now.
And he and Echo have such like a different rapport than he has with Elektra. Like he asks her, like, "Did you hear about this murder?" And she's like, "Really? Come on. Like, I'm deaf. You gonna ask me if I heard about something?"
Yeah, that actually could confuse me because a couple of times he's talking to her
where she's not looking at him, so how is she able to read his lips?
I'm looking at page 18 where they're hugging and talking. It's like, well, she's looking over your shoulder. How is she going to read your lips?
I noticed that a couple of times where they're a little inconsistent with how his blindness works and how her deafness works. But
yeah, that page too, like she's looking down at him while they're talking. And it's like, well, looking down at his chest while they're like sort of standing close to him. I was like, she's not reading your lips then. But it didn't matter ultimately. Stuff like that is only important if the story doesn't work, which it did. I really enjoyed it. I like Echo. It's a 4-issue mini. It's not too big of a commitment. Hey, guess what?
Tell us.
You're really going to love Peacemaker going forward because he's going to be
Hey, Connor, there's a little arrow that's in the shape of a G on the cover of this book.
There is. I see
that. How about
that?
Your theory is bearing fruit.
Green Arrow number 2, Josh Williams, Sean Isaacs, and Peacemaker shows up at the end with, what's her name? Peace Wrecker.
Lady Peacemaker.
Yeah. And
one of my favorite moments in this book is Roy is gearing up for battle, and he grabs three different bows. He grabs a compound bow, a long bow, and a crossbow. And Dinah just says, yeah, you're best with the recurve. Here, take this one. She hands him a fourth bow and then just walks off and says, let's get to work.
Yeah, well.
You don't need that many bows. Pick one.
Here's my question.
Yeah.
Every time I've ever talked to an editor or a comic creator of any kind,
uh-oh,
and I have said, hey, does the studio make you do that? Were you putting that character in? They all say, no. So is there, let's just assume for a second that that is true, that what they're saying is that no one's making them do it. Are the people trying to sort of stick with the zeitgeist, or
I don't believe that's true. I don't believe it's true.
No, I don't either.
Because in an interview recently, Brian Bendis said that he was made to put Black Adam in the Justice League team when the movie was coming out. Mm-hmm. So I don't believe that's true. I think they're saying that because they don't get fired.
Yeah, but the thing is this, like, you've got a big movie coming out or whatever, and Flash has to show up more, or Cyborg or whatever. Like, I get mm-hmm. that. Is Peacemaker really a thing?
No.
Right? You know what I mean?
People like that show. I liked that show.
Sure, but did 35 million people watch the show? No.
Right. That's what I'm getting at. Like Harley Quinn, I get it. There was a whole movement there. It's Margot Robbie. That's mm-hmm. worldwide or whatever. But like Peacemaker still seems like a pretty niche thing to have him show up in four different books this week, it seemed like. Yeah.
I think if you're trying to tell a Green Arrow story, you know, he's famously the lefty liberal of the Justice League sure. set. So if you want to pit him against sort of an John antithetical Walker. Antihero, yeah. then you find the very kind of fascist conservative antihero and see where that story goes. So like I can see an organic way this came about, but the timing is mm-hmm. certainly suspect.
Yeah, I believe it's true.
I think it does make sense in that. Like I can't fault it. Like I can't be like he wouldn't be there. It's just that it is over and over. But I think like in the past you would use like Guy Gardner for that or something. And
Hawkman was his
oh. It's almost foil. I mean it's almost more the shoehorning in of Amanda Waller.
Well, yeah, because they shoehorned her in after the movie. So like it is all 100% them being told to do this for the corporate synergy. And I don't believe for one second when they say otherwise, because every once in a while it slips out that it's true.
I didn't actually see anybody. That's just historically, like I've seen that be a thing, but
it's just like how every actor says they all love making the movie.
I've lost the thread about what this book was about.
Yeah, I did too. I didn't love this issue as much as I did the first one. I quite enjoyed the first one. I liked the sort of sci-fi element of putting
them lost in time with his daughter, and he can't. And I didn't remember, like, so he can't ever go see his family again.
I don't know.
And then he made a house in the woods, and you're like, that doesn't make any sense. And then they said, no, Batman gave me this super pop-up tent. And I was like, okay.
Did you not like the chili, Josh?
It was.
I thought about you all reading that scene in particular, where he just slaps the bowl away and says, "It's not you. It's the chili. It's shameful."
Yeah. Look at that's the most emotion he shows in the whole book in that panel when he slaps it away.
He gets real upset that he tried to make chili on an alien planet and couldn't figure it out.
Like, I mean, I could have told you that wasn't going to work.
it wasn't as good. I didn't really enjoy reading it all that much.
It's fine. Like Josh Williamson does a lot of good things in here. And you know, it's very energetic and it's packed full of DC stuff. But to me, it's like, it's one quarter turn too frenetic. Like mm-hmm. I don't know what to grab onto.
Yes.
Kinda
I agree with that.
Care. I don't love that.
That's exactly right. There's too much, especially for like a rebooted situation. Like you're supposed to be making it super accessible and sort of starting from scratch. It felt like way too much is happening.
It's the family thing again. So the family thing over and over again. It's as if like every book has to be an ensemble thing all the time.
Yeah, it's not, it's like a couple years ago when, you know, all the DCCW shows were going strong, and on all of those shows, they took the single hero and they gave him a team behind him. Even right. Supergirl had a fucking team on her headset. Like, and so suddenly that started seeping into the comics a little bit. And so,
but at least that made sense from a TV standpoint.
No, I get that. I'm saying is that started seeping into the comics now, where it's like impossible just to have like a single hero. You know, they've got to have, you know, Elektra's got to be a Daredevil and I don't necessarily dislike it all. It's just that there's never a book about just one guy or one girl or whatever. Right. It's just always a bunch of people.
They got to have a kid.
Right.
And even if they already had a kid, they need to have a new kid that we never knew about, an Oliver Brady. as it were. Was Oliver's last name Brady?
Oliver, was it the Brady Bunch? Family
Ties was they added an extra kid later. I think Oliver was the first one where they added a cute kid to the Brady Bunch.
Yeah, anyway, Oliver Brady, yeah.
He was like a cousin, though. Cousin Oliver. He was like Greg.
Oh, my God. He looks annoying.
I'm trying to think of books that are one character. Like, She-Hulk's kind of one character.
No, she's got Jack of Hearts and Hellcat.
I know, but that's like the love interest and whatever, and she's got a friend, but it's not like it's still following her around as she does stuff and then interacts with those people afterwards. They gave
Flash a literal family of Flash, like his entire family got Flash powers. I mean, I'm not saying there's no books. I'm just saying there's a lot fewer books than there used to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Iron Man a little bit, but he had Hellcat basically in every issue of that last series.
Uh-huh. But I think one of the things is when, like, obviously there can be other characters or whatever, but when you cut away to other scenes of the other people doing shit that have nothing to do with the main character, uh-huh, that's different. So when it said the front of the book says Green Arrow, it doesn't mean that's not synonymous with Oliver Queen.
Right.
It's synonymous with all of the Green Arrow family and characters, which is like what's happening in a lot of books.
I think that's a good distinction. I see what you're saying now, Josh. I was struggling a little bit to see your point before, but that makes sense the way you put.
So like in Action Comics, like the first couple of scenes were all of the, you know, Gen Z Supermen.
Yeah, doing actions. I'll have you
right,
know.
Right, that he wasn't there for. In this Oliver Queen book, Arsenal like has a scene where he is very, very rough with a security guard,
mm-hmm,
holding the arrow an inch from his face.
Right. I don't know. I just didn't love it as much as I did the first one. I liked the first one. Ryan and I talked about it. I think it was like in pick of the week contention, but issue two wasn't that good.
Yeah, fair. It's not what I want from a Green Arrow reboot from a character that hasn't had a book for a while.
Right.
I don't know what I do want, but it ain't this. I know what I want. I want what Tom Taylor did in Deceased. I want that Oliver Queen.
Yeah.
And also the one that in the Vampire one too. He was good in that.
Yep. There is no logo on the Justice Society of America cover. No corner logo.
Just what would it be if there was one?
They couldn't figure it out.
I don't know.
Somebody was like, "We just put them all on there," and they're like, "That isn't going to work, Carl."
Would you put the table?
Maybe Carl's got the worst ideas.
The justice. I would do the silhouette of the Hall of Justice
for the Justice Society.
Oh
yeah.
Right, no,
Hall
sorry.
Of Justice, the Justice, Justice League. Society.
Then you can't, don't do it.
All right, so
they did. They didn't.
I think, Josh, what you said about Green Arrow, I think slightly applies to this book as well. It's like one quarter turn too much happening in this book.
I really like it a lot.
But yeah, there's this issue felt almost like too manic, but I get it.
But I do. The difference here is that I do feel grounded with a couple of the characters. Like, mm-hmm, I feel like Helena Wayne. That sounds weird when you say it all together.
Helena?
Yeah, sure. I don't know. I feel like I know where she's coming from, what she's doing, where she's going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least so much that I care about it. Like, I have a handle on it. I feel like, you know, new Dr. Fate. Like, okay, I kind of get what's going on here. I know who the villain is and what they want. And so therefore, that's the skeleton that all those things get to hang on. I don't think you're wrong, because I know that every time a new issue comes out, I'm like, wait, what the hell? Like, it's like it takes a little too long to ramp up, but right. I don't think you're wrong.
No, I didn't think it was bad. It's just like this, like I'm exhausted when I finish it. It's like, oh, that was a lot.
Yeah.
This was a good reminder that now also Power Girl is wearing that Superman jacket as well. So she has the same.
Everybody gets jackets.
With the Superman.
Like, I get it if you want to shrink the boob keyhole. I understand. That makes sense. Nothing wrong with that costume, though.
Yeah, the costume's good.
You can spot it. You know, it's like, you know exactly what it is. Know who I'm looking at. I don't know what this constant redesigning of costumes into more complicated and less appealing, visually sort of appealing and sort of just that instant recognition.
Yeah.
I don't know why we've been doing this since 2000 X-Men, and I hate it.
Yeah, they costumes need to be, you need to instantly recognize who you're looking at, right? There, mm-hmm, should be like a primary color you associate with them, which is why I have a problem with the Sam Wilson Captain America redesign is because the primary color for him becomes white. When I think of Captain America, I think of blue because most of his costume is blue. But
it's still classic Deadman in this issue, though. Got to give him
everything else was good. I really like the Jerry Ordway flashback art. I mean, anytime you get Jerry Ordway, it's really great. And you know, the mystery is fun of this guy trying to kill them through time. So there's a lot of things he can play with. This is a fun. It's a fun book. You know, this is Geoff Johns, and he has introduced some of the characters from his Stargirl TV show into the book. So now we have the young woman, Dr. Midnight, here instead of the traditional Dr. Midnight. And Yolanda, the Wildcat, Yolanda is not – I mean, she was on the show, but she was from the comics in the 70s. But so he has been melding things from his TV shows into his books, which is kind of annoying, but also whatever. I guess the horses have left the barn.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Dead Romans, I have thoughts, guys.
I would love to hear them.
I don't know what the fuck is happening in this book.
That's correct.
I think the art's really nice to look at on an image-to-image basis. I think it's not very good telling stories. It doesn't do storytelling very well, the art, which is Nick Marinkovic.
You know what's interesting is that I don't know any of the names here except for the colorist.
Yeah,
Jose Villarubia, and I was like, "Oh, that guy's a like a veteran."
I just have a problem telling people apart. Telling you know, like I don't think the panel-to-panel storytelling is strong. I think the images are strong,
right?
I just don't think the progression of storytelling is strong, and I just don't know what's going on here, other than these Germanic tribes keep attacking the Romans and over again.
I wanted to just say Jerry Ordway is 65. I thought he'd be older.
He's got it.
Yeah, he's got got it. And I just thought
he was young.
Yes, that's what I was getting at. Anyway, getting back. So what I would tell you is the Dead Romans 3 probably would have been my pick of the week.
Ooh.
And I am not saying that
scandal.
What you're talking about doesn't exist and that your criticism is not valid, because I think it is. But again, I was catching up on stuff. So I read 2 and 3 fairly close together, which helped a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember in the first issue, there was a really big problem. And I was like, I'm not exactly sure what's going on here, but I get it now. There is a Roman guy who is actually a German. He's in love with the girl and he switched sides, and she doesn't believe that he will have switched sides. So here's all your, you know, and she's a slave, but she's totally devoted to her Roman side. And there's like, it's like a little revolution happening in this place. And I get it. There were a couple of times I was like, wait, who's Arcturus or whatever? But by the end of it, because I had read 2 in a row, I was kind of paying attention and it was okay. But again, you're not wrong. It's like one of those movies that everything is too close and too dark and too stylized and you can't quite see. But I do really enjoy it for the fact that, like, you know, I love Roman stories like this. It's fun. Mm-hmm. Like the art is, while not storytelling wise, fantastic. You know, it is real good to look at.
Yeah, the image. I mean, it's beautiful. I really love it. But also, I don't know who anybody is or how to tell them apart, and that's also a problem.
I think that's spot on. I agree with you. But I'll take it.
Yeah. I mean, it's different.
Yeah, I'm still reading it too, and I agree with all of the criticisms and the praise, and the action sequences are told a little clearer, but I still don't know who's fighting who and why.
Yeah, it's your people. Yes.
Well, that's because I think there's the guy who switched sides brought people with him, and so you've got Romans on Romans, and that's where it gets confusing, I think, because you got Centurion armor on both sides instead of like, oh, this guy's a barbarian.
Right.
This guy's a Roman soldier. That's very easy.
Plus, at one point, a guy gets his arm slashed off with a gladius. And I always thought a gladius was more of a piercing weapon than a slashing weapon. But maybe that's just D&D rules.
So a little while ago, you said, I agree with everything you said in terms of praise and criticism. And what I thought was, why are you fucking here? And then you just showed me why you were here. So good work.
Oh, wow. All right.
I didn't really think, why are you here? I was going to make that joke, and I didn't, because it would have sounded mean, but then you brought up a thing that neither of us would have.
Said it, and it still sounded mean.
It's because you Irish Americans needed some German representation in this discussion of the Romans versus my Kraut ancestors.
I got to say, there was only one group that kept the Romans from taking over their land.
Apparently they were Jason Momoa, according to these drawings.
Yeah. Unstoppable Doom Patrol, I think, would have been in my pick of the week discussion. This is the third issue of this miniseries. And it was super fun to throw Guy Gardner and Kyle Rayner into this weirdo Chris Burnham drawn mix. And I liked it quite a bit.
That's nuts. Look at that.
The thing that I felt with this issue, so like, yeah, we're dealing with this sort of Doom Patrol acting as X-Men, where they're taking in misfits of the DC universe who are like, you know, in this case, they're taking on a guy who's got a star on his face, but he's somehow slightly immune or able to also operate with the star on his face and calls himself Starbro, which is very annoying. But this issue was the one instance where I was just like, wait, Doom Patrol can't. They can't really believe that, like, having a star on the team is okay. That's right. Insane. That's a terrible idea. The Green Lanterns are correct. Get rid of that thing.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I liked a lot of bits in here. I thought the ghost car button was cool, where it turned the car like intangible, drove through
that. That was like some good Doom Patrol weirdness. I liked that too.
I like a lot that Cliff and Larry escape to. With Starbro to Smallville, because they think that the Green Lanterns won't attack them there, but Guy Gardner smashes them with the sign. I thought that was all fun. I really liked it.
Animal, vegetable, mineral men.
And this is just a weird, fun book, and I enjoy it.
I loved the, soon it will be an animal, vegetable, mineral world, and my first thought was like, it already is. Like, those are the categories.
That's like one of those things, like, that's full of chemicals. Yes, that's correct. And is it always a correct statement?
Everything that's made of matter is.
It's chock full of chemicals. I'm going to need to be more specific.
Good chemicals, bad ones.
Really quick, I wanted to touch in on what's the furthest place from here. This is issue 13. The last couple of these I thought have been really strong because they kind of focused on a couple of people in different parts of the world, which I think has worked for the book after they sort of set up the initial stuff. This is about two of the characters who have been captured by these zookeepers. Like, everywhere they meet fucking weirdos and they do horrible things to other people. They're trapped in these cells, and basically it's the story of all of these escape attempts. And when they don't work, they end up back in the cells. There's a 6-panel grid to denote that you end up back there day 8, day 11. Mm-hmm. It keeps going for a really long time. And then, like, the theme is, we will not be beaten. We will keep fighting. And then you slowly, it's 40 pages, the story. You slowly get to the point where, you know, they are defeated. And it's kind of not what you expect, you know, based on all other narratives that you read, you know, because they always get out. But in this one, that doesn't really happen. And it's actually quite sad. And then they even lose track of the days, like, it's day question mark. It's just about the breaking of a spirit and, like, just not being able to overcome this sort of world. I really enjoyed it. That's all.
Those are the books we wanted to talk about, but at patreon.com/ifanboy, all of the iFanboy patrons have the opportunity to vote to add a book to the rundown this week by possibly the most overwhelming margin we've ever had.
Really?
Which I think says more about the week than the book itself.
Fair.
The winner was Fury number 1 from Marvel Comics, written by Al Ewing, with art by Scott Eaton, Tom Riley, Adam Kubert, Ramon Rosanes, inks by Cam Smith. I haven't seen that name in a while. Colors by Jordi Belair, and letters by Joey C. Joey Bag of Donuts, Caramagna.
Big Joey C.
And this is a one-shot celebrating 60 years of the world's most dangerous super spy, and yet the cover shows New Fury, not Nick Fury. He's not been around 60 years. I hate this.
So...
I like Ryan, the stories about Nick Fury. I like the story about Nick Fury. I just hate, first of all, Nick Fury, always one of my favorite Marvel characters. Yes. And I hate how they shuffled him off because of the movies. It took one of the most fun aspects of the whole universe and threw it in the toilet. Mm-hmm. I don't care about this new Nick Fury. He hasn't done anything to earn his place as Nick Fury in the universe. You know what I mean? Like, this, the stature that Nick Fury held before.
He doesn't have a, I don't know. I don't know anything about him. Seen a million comics. Like, he has no point of view. He has no unique characterization that I can tell.
Right.
You know, like, I understand. Listen, you know, old Nick Fury, you know, it's definitely a symbol of a bygone era that maybe a lot of people aren't going to relate to in the same way that they would. But, it, you know, say what you will, at least an ethos. You know, this new one, I don't, a super spy? Like,
at least he had a character. He had a personality. He had a way of talking. He had a history in the whole universe going back to the beginning. Like, he represented something when he appeared on the page, and this new guy is like, oh, there's Sam Jackson. That's all he represents.
And there's a bit in here where like they're calling each other dad and son, and they have a hug, and I was like, I don't buy this at all.
No, yeah, I had that exact thought. I was like,
totally unearned.
Yeah, totally unearned.
How much do you feel like you failed as a father if your son loses the same eye you lost?
I mean, it's got a sting.
Like I feel like all the injuries I have in my life are what I'm working to prevent my son from having the exact same injury, right?
It should have been opposite eyes, like a mirror.
That would have been better. And I feel like
your first feeling, don't forget it. That would be a great short story to introduce us to these characters having some sort of relationship, is to have them discussing how they each lost their eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That would make the hug more interesting than it is, because they don't ever interact.
Okay.
I mean, on the first page of this book, they put the title on, you know, as part of the panel, which that at least is classic Nick Fury comic book storytelling. Yep. And then it's been so long, but there was like an issue of, it might have been the Ultimates or something. I think it was a Warren Ellis writing this new version of Nick Fury, which it feels like Al Ewing is kind of, I don't want to say aping, but like the way they're doing the kind of low-key tech that the new Nick Fury operates with, it felt very reminiscent of the Ultimates era, which is where this Nick Fury comes from.
Should be. You
know, elephant, and should have remained, right? Elephant in the room. I mean, that was a metatextual comic where they referred to him looking like Sam Jackson.
Should have stayed there. Yep.
Should have stayed there. My first feeling, the thing Josh told me to remember, was just this book just felt so long.
Yes, it did.
It wasn't that long, but it felt like the longest book I read this week.
Double size, yeah.
So I got to the bits where the first bit, I don't really know what this was going to be when I sort of started it. And, you know, the first bit is Nick Fury 2, and then we cut to the unseen on the moon, which they have at least toned down enough so that I at least know I'm looking at Nick Fury. Like, it's something. He's got a little bit of Watcher on the Wall thing. You know, it's not good, but it's not as terrible as it was. However, then they cut to the aping of the Jim Steranko kind of stuff.
Yep.
And I'm reading it, and I was like, I should like this more than I do. But it...
The stuff where he's going to the moon?
It looks okay on the surface, I guess, but I wasn't compelled by it at all. And, like, the art was kind of fun, but it wasn't, like... It wasn't giving me the joy that I kind of wanted to have from it. I didn't get anything out of it. It was bland. Not bad.
Yeah. I did like the 60s story. Like, so they told stories from different eras as the new Fury fights this Scorpio group. I did kind of enjoy the silliness of Nick going to the moon, you know, before the official space race and falling back down to Earth and surviving. Like, I did kind of like that all, but
I just felt like I was working to get through it, and it wasn't like I read this last in a huge book. It was like I was fine. I had time, and I was there was no hook for me.
So at the end, so I thought in another book we got away from Nick being the Watcher, like on the moon. I thought that
happened. I didn't see.
Like, didn't that happen in Avengers? Like, where he's no longer
like,
the
because we were like. Oh, good. It's over. I remember that. I don't remember the details, but that definitely happened.
And then, so now we're back to him being the unseen on the moon.
No, because he went through a portal.
No, he took off this time. He's not even going to be on the moon. He just headed off into wherever.
Well, now he's gone. Like, but
yeah.
When the book
starts, is that better or worse?
No, when the book starts, he's the unseen on the moon again. And then the end, he goes through this portal. Hugs his son goodbye and says, I'm out. And so I guess he's done. I guess we're done with Nick Fury.
No. He's going into the multiverse. And the unseen was... So Nick Fury's unseen character was a big character in the most recent run of Exiles, which is a very multiverse-heavy book. And so I thought they were kind of leaning into that, where it seemed like what they were doing to me was setting up a Nick Fury as a quantum leaper around the multiverse, solving problems and porting around to be able to, because that's they have like this page where it's this very off model Nick Fury with a bowl cut.
Yeah, it's a Caesar.
He's got
a portal, Caesar.
And then there's like, he's got a Caesar cut. There's like five panels of Nick Fury doing various Nick Fury type things around him. And so I thought they were setting up sort of we're going to use old Nick Fury to tell multiverse stories where we can pretend that it's still. the Nick Fury we all remember and want to be in the comics while not getting rid of Sam Jackson Nick Fury in the 616. I don't know.
If I may, just real quick, so that we don't sound like, or at least I don't sound like completely I hate everything new. In Marvel proper, and I know it's not really S.H.I.E.L.D., but we'll say it's S.H.I.E.L.D., Maria Hill as being the person in charge of it, I like her much more than the idea of this Nick Fury being in charge of it. So I'm glad for that. She's
and here's again, a question, though.
Her character has, she has a character, she has a purpose, she has a point of view. I like her.
But here's a question I have for both of you. If there was a functioning S.H.I.E.L.D. organization in the 616 currently, would the Sam Jackson Nick Furies rub you as much the wrong way? Like, if he was just a member of S.H.I.E.L.D., it still would? Okay. Because to me, I feel like that would smooth over some of the...
Because he's still replacing one of my favorite Marvel characters. He's
I know, but to me, that would smooth over some of the kinks that I'm feeling with the
Here's what
new
I would
Fury.
Propose. If I... And I hate... I don't like to do this because it's always like a shitty thing for like a reviewer to be like, well, here's what I would do. Which I've done several times in this show. I would like Nick Fury to be there. When I say Nick Fury, I mean Nick Fury. I don't know, you know, not Sam Jackson. And he could serve as like the General Hawk of S.H.I.E.L.D. Like you can have Maria Hill be, you know, the Duke, the one who, you know, is running stuff.
And then this Fury is Flint.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's fine with me. Like, at least then you could at least build up as a character, and you could build him up in relation to his father. And
sure,
it wouldn't feel so forced and out of nowhere.
But you could also call him another name. I know they won't have him. Just
Sam Fury.
Yes, but you know what? You're right, though. He's not going anywhere. That being the case, somebody give him a personality, because I don't know. I don't know what it is. I don't know anything about him.
So did they reform S.H.I.E.L.D. in this comic? I thought it happened in another book.
It didn't seem like they officially did it in this book.
I feel like in another book, they changed the acronym, but they were bringing S.H.I.E.L.D. back. What book was that?
That did happen.
That was last week.
That is not a question any of us are equipped to answer at the moment.
I did like the way they drew the Watcher in the final story. It was really creepy, the giant head. Yeah. I thought the art was very effective.
I don't mind the fact, like, it's funny because the Watcher thing is like, don't break that rule. But every Watcher story is, breaking that rule. But they sort of get around it here in that, like, this Watcher has ascended.
Right.
And I like that. He was the special one. Everything about Earth is a little bit more special in these stories. And he broke the rules, and then he ascended to sort of the next plane of things. And I love that it was very classic Marvel for him to just being like, dude, I have so much power. You have no idea. It's just so much power. And they never define in any comics what that means, which is also great.
Was it Fantastic Four where they brought S.H.I.E.L.D. back?
That was Fantastic Four was where they hinted that Sam Jackson would next show up.
I don't know. In
for
some
more
book
on
last
the future
week,
of Nick Fury
S.H.I.E.L.D.
and S.H.I.E.L.D., be sure not to miss Fantastic Four number 7.
Maybe it was Fantastic Four, I don't remember. All right, where are we in the script? Okay, so that's the patron. Let's rate it, do ratings on it.
Ratings.
There's no second issue here, so we don't have to say whether we're sticking with it or not.
I wouldn't.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Are you going to stick with it? But we're all sticking with Fantastic Four.
Yeah. I can't stop him from showing up in other books. So
write a strongly worded letter.
Ratings. Out of 5, I'm going to give this a 3, I guess. Like, it was fine. I hate the concept, but as a comic book, as an execution of a comic, I thought it was fine.
It wasn't like that Superboy Nightwing story. It wasn't like, oh, who's doing this? I'm going to say 2.5, like right down the middle. You know, from a interest level, like, did you love it? You know, like, it's a lower score, but you know, as a comic book, I don't know, maybe somebody this does it for them. It is a competently made piece of comic book work.
Yeah,
I think I'm with Connor. I think I'm at a solid 3. There were a few things about it I liked. The concept overall doesn't work for me. Yeah, but 3 feels right.
I would be really interested to know if there are people who like the new Nick Fury. I know that there's people who don't really know anything about the old Nick Fury, and so, like, he's just Nick Fury to them. But, like, are there anybody who, like, prefers this character? I can't imagine. Anyway.
Maybe Sam Jackson.
Every character is somebody's favorite.
Sam Jackson is fantastic, and I'm sure that he gets a kick out of seeing his face in comic books all the time. But I have a feeling that he really liked Nick Fury. like Nick Fury.
Right. He would never be able to say it, but...
No.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. Every patron of the show gets a chance to vote. Thanks to all the patrons who do, and thanks to all those who are patrons. Hey, that's the best way you can support this show and all the fine shows we do. All of the many shows, the 6 to 8 shows a month we do, is through Patreon.com/iFanboy. They're our main source of support, and they unlock shows for everyone to enjoy. They unlock all the Splode shows, media, talk, and book. And we appreciate them. We try to make things fun for them. They've built a really nice community at Discord, and the Facebook group is currently still going. And we have fun things like monthly hangouts, which happened this month, this weekend, and with special prizes. Not prizes, but special merch and stuff, special things.
What?
I don't know.
We're giving away prizes. Yeah, we're giving away prizes.
I mean, it's easy to give away a Marvel No Prize.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's perfect. I don't know. My brain went for a break during the middle of that sentence, and I don't know what happened. I'll get back to the reading the script instead. So thanks for that. And like we said last week, we are in the midst of revamping the patron rewards, and we are closer than ever. We just had another round of design review on the thing we have to include for it. And so we're getting close.
It'd be weird if you promised that you were further from ever. Like we've lost progress.
I think we took a step back. You know why?
No, I don't think. Well,
Connor is tenacious about this is all wrong. Back to the drawing board.
Yeah. I threw the designs at the designer. And I said, right. Get your head out of your ass.
And by that, like he texted it at him. Because it doesn't exist physically in any form.
That's true. I didn't do any of that. I did have notes, but I was not mean.
You were polite.
iFanboy.threadless.com is our t-shirt store. 12 designs are there. You can get them on t-shirts, and you can get them on all kinds of goods and sundries, and like a skateboard deck that Josh has attached to his wall with Hawkeye. Yeah, with someone else on it.
It's a skull. It's a mask skull character.
Yeah.
Does it have anything to do with Hawkeye?
Hawkeye's not dead.
Dead man.
There's nothing. Dead man's dead.
It's not dead man either. It is no character.
Yeah, it's a good point.
It's not Mr. Bones. It's no one.
It's just a skeleton. Well,
he's not dead. His skin's just invisible. I learned that on the show recently.
Yeah.
Skull iconography is part and parcel with the skateboard world. Certainly the earliest of it.
Yeah.
So it's just that with a hat.
I wonder if Threadless would put it on the back of like a leather jacket. That design. You know, that'd be fun. Anyway.
It's just the Black Freighter.
FMO.com/support is our digital PayPal tip jar. FMO.com/Amazon is where you can find an Amazon link and also our Booksplode books. And bookshop.org is our partner to help support local bookstores, and you can find those links on the Booksplode shows. Thanks to everyone who supports the show in any way they can. Ryan, now it is your time to thank a $5 or higher patron by bestowing upon them the fabled patron power.
I'm told it's supposed to be a dumb power.
No.
No, that's not a rule.
It's in the script.
It says in the script, yes. But
Lindsay Falls.
Is that always in the script?
It's always in the script.
I guess it is. We should take that out. Yeah.
Scrub it out.
I've deleted it.
Well, Lindsay Falls, script. I actually don't think I'm giving a dumb power out. I think I'm giving out a very interesting and potentially profitable power. Uh-huh. How about that? Yeah. Because Lindsay Falls is the auctioneer. So Lindsay can grab any item and start auctioning it off to whoever is nearby. And there's an auctioneer hammer that magically manifests, and people will be psychically compelled to engage with the auction, and all sales are final.
And they do the he has the voice he she
yeah
I think it's a yeah yeah I gotta give it now
that's part of the power is being able to do the voice compellingly.
Lindsay's just at your house and suddenly picks up like your TV and says we're auctioning this off. Can I say wait a minute? No,
it's too late. And you will be psychically compelled to bid for it, as will everyone else in the vicinity.
For your own stuff?
Lindsay is not allowed at my house.
Like if you're walking around, like are
Lindsay's
you
allowed
on the
to
street?
Keep the profits? Like you, if you park your truck,
you can't split the profits with the owner.
No, that's not how it works. The auctioneer.
That's not what profit is. That's just revenue. Then.
So Lindsay's a thief.
But yeah, that's what I'm getting out of this.
A thief that's psychically enabled to sell anything they can get their hands on.
I recognize you've created a supervillain, which is okay.
It's a thief and a fence all wrapped into one.
If Josh parks his truck and Lindsay jumps into the bed of the truck and starts auctioning the truck, there's nothing Josh can do.
Let me ask you this. Can either of you think of a legitimate use of this?
Well, for Lindsay's bank account to pad that's what supervillains do.
This, I mean, he better have a superpowered tax accountant because you're not going to be able to clear all that. I guess well, it's no, all cash business.
It's a,
I mean,
it's
they also don't have to use the power.
Thief slash fence slash money launderer.
But I mean, auctioneering is a pretty public way to fence your goods.
I guess a legitimate way to do it would be like instead of Craigslist. Like you would just go to like a busy corner and be like, oh, wait a minute though. You said the power compels people to bid and pay. That's just extortion.
I mean, the power isn't very interesting if they can auction stuff off, but nobody has to engage with them. Like that's just a person yelling.
But Lindsay, it's just gotta be really, really, you know, persuasive. Convince people to bid.
I think the persuasiveness is part of the power. I mean, that's a hammer appears.
That's like a third tier Flash rogue. That's a bad guy.
I like it.
I'm not against it. I think you're trying to sell it as something that can be used for good, and I cannot figure out a way.
I don't know that I said that.
We've never said it's for good. We just said it's a power. We've had many evil powers before.
There is, in fact, no.
I trust Lindsay to find a way to use this.
We often say it's up to them whether they're going to use the powers for good or evil.
That's true. And if there isn't a good, if there isn't just because
the power allows them to pocket the money from the sale doesn't mean they couldn't, you know, give half to Goodwill if they just go to Goodwill and start auctioning off all the Goodwill stuff.
You've got a Robin Hood at best.
Yeah.
The world could use a few more Robin Hoods, Josh.
I don't want to buy a new TV because some dude came along and sold it to one of my neighbors and kept like hypnotized my neighbors into buying it and then kept all the money.
Listen, Josh, you're in San Francisco on a business trip. Lindsay grabs the cornerstone of Twitter HQ and starts auctioning off Twitter. Suddenly, you've just bought Twitter from Elon Musk.
What about the people? I guess they already all lost their jobs, so it doesn't matter.
Eh, only 70% of them.
You know what I don't want? Twitter.
you were compelled to bid on it.
The power of Twitter compels you.
I guess I'm CEO and chair now.
So
go $47.
Get your kitchen sink and walk into your office.
Well, the thing is, like, he's in San Francisco. He's going to be bidding against people with much more means than Josh has.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
But does I guess maybe the psychic compelling can't force people to spend money they don't have.
Right.
I think
that would be bad. That's fair. Well, that seems fair.
Wait, now when you say money you don't have, like, you could have money, but it could be a catastrophic thing to spend all of it.
Because yeah, but now you own Twitter.
Again.
All right. That was good. Thank you.
I mean, it's endlessly. You can we could keep going.
Thank you to Lindsay for being a patron. Thanks for Ryan for that power. That was fun. Well, what do you guys think? We're at the borderline of being done.
One of them.
Do we want to do even one? Because we're in the borderline.
I say one of them.
All right, do one. It's fine.
The second one.
Matt from Miami, Florida. We all know death is only temporary in the main Marvel and DC continuity. What's the most significant change that really was permanent? My vote is for removing Green Lantern's weakness to yellow. Honorable mention is for heroes who now have had children for long enough to feel permanent. Including Clark and Lois, Bruce Wayne, and Reed and Sue. I would say nothing is permanent, and they could very easily bring the yellow back at any time.
It is a good example, though. I mean,
it's permanent, a good example of a
permanent
fundamental
is,
change.
Is an air quotes around it, or it's italicized, but you know, for a really long time. Or, for example, you know, originally Superman couldn't fly; he just jumped real far.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
You know, and they changed that around.
And carried a gun.
Yeah, that's true. You know, you have to. I don't know. I feel like I had an answer for this before because it was on the script before.
Gwen Stacy, I think, is still. I know there was an.
But that was only a change in that she went from living to dead.
But it's pretty, one they haven't undone.
Yeah.
I mean, they did a major retcon of her character in the J. Michael Straczynski Amazing Spider-Man arc that I think was universally hated and rejected.
Please don't mention it.
Just
it's just better to never mention that again.
It was bad.
I mean, I had forgotten about them getting rid of the yellow. That was all wrapped up in Green Lantern Rebirth, where it turned out that Parallax, the yellow creature, was inside the ring. And that's what drove Hal mad, and that's what caused the yellow impurity. So once they removed that, it was no longer a thing. I think they were trying to get rid of, you know, one of the sillier Silver Age aspects. But as I grew older, I like those aspects. So I think I'd be fine with it coming back just because it's always fun to have things like that.
I think in modern comics, it would be really hard to sell that yellow thing.
Oh, sure.
Because every time I think about
it, in Cosmic Odyssey when the bomb is yellow, like that was a super powerful moment, you know?
And yes. Wasn't there a moment in All-Star Batman where he paints everything in the Batcave yellow?
Yes.
Yeah. I also think that like that explanation for why the yellow impurity went away, that's elegant. Like
that was one of Jeff Johns' finest moments. Yes.
Yeah. That's real good. Yeah. I'm trying to think. I mean, like there's all these characters that show. I mean, Damian is probably one of the premier examples.
You
mentioned
that adding the kids, and the kids are fairly permanent because, you know, I mean, Valeria and Franklin are not new characters. They've been around a long time. Compared to Jonathan and Damian, for sure. You know, Franklin Richards. Yeah. God, when did he first come into comics? Franklin Richards.
I'm really thinking hard.
Guess the 70s. About
something that's changed, and I wish I was.
Franklin Richards was introduced in 1968. I wouldn't call that a change. It was like, you know, fairly early on in the run of the characters.
They made him into a mutant. I mean, there's a bunch of things that stuck around for a long time. Like Krakoa has stuck around for a really long time, relatively speaking. Or I don't have a second answer.
It's not my favorite, but this Alfred thing seems pretty permanent. You know,
the Lantern Corps, the various colors. Oh,
the various colored lanterns.
Around. Yeah,
but they're always changing. You know, it's like every time I turn around, the Guardians are good, they're evil, they're back, they're gone. There's some other group running the Green Lantern. Like it's always seems to be like they're constantly fucking with the Green Lantern.
I mean, at one point, Barry Allen was reading about Jay Garrick as a comic book character.
right. I'm just trying to think of things like it's
like, you know, it's not permanent that Wally West is a murderer.
Yeah. If they let's forget about that. That's basically what they said.
Even Tom was like, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. That's a bad idea.
It's been pretty permanent that like Dick Grayson is Nightwing now.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I'm trying to think, you know, like Kate Bishop kind of stuck around. In a way that wasn't terrible, sort of against all. No, I know, but like she became, I'm trying to think about people who took over, you know, sort of from the, I mean, Wally West is actually a really good example, you know, going from being, wasn't a kid, but like became the main Flash and we all were okay with it.
Yeah.
You know, like the identity of the Flash proper in the DC universe shifted and like, I don't know, it was there for so long that people just sort of, accepted or whatever in a way that probably isn't going to happen with Sam Wilson or something like that.
Well, I mean, it's similar to when Dick Grayson took over for Batman, everybody liked that because those characters have been around forever. Like because it was Wally who had been Barry's sidekick since the 60s, you know, people had affection for the character. If it was just some rando person.
Yeah. And introducing new characters, like another significant one in recent years, at least that wasn't introduced in like a straightforward way of just here's a new character would be something like figuring out a way to keep Miles Morales in the 616.
I mean, there's one. Yeah. I think Thor being the Allfather is one that I don't like that has stuck around for a while.
I feel like that comes and goes though. Right. Cause I don't think.
For a while. I mean, like whenever Jason Aaron's run was.
And they seem to be sticking with it, like Josh said. Like in the most recent issue, they were like.
So do you guys think Superman should go back to not being able to fly?
Well, they did do that in the New 52 and Grant Morrison's
run. Grant Morrison run, yeah. With the boots and jeans.
Yeah, jeans.
I mean, Beast in the X-Men is a character who's kind of constantly being reinvented and has gone through pretty significant changes that have stuck.
I think X-Men is actually a really good example of characters that remain very fluid and they become a lot of things. So like Cyclops, you know, it was the leader and then he was kind of broken and then he was evil. And now, you know, like he's not the leader anymore. He's sort of the special forces guy.
Yeah.
Like X-Men is really good at that. You know,
X-Men is really good at that. I mean, you know, Bobby Drake being outed, Colossus was dead for a while. He's back now. Kitty Pryde was gone in a bullet for a while. She's back now. Professor X's role really has changed a lot. Another one that you guys have talked about recently is Captain Marvel still dead.
Yeah.
Captain Marvel.
Oh, yeah. I don't know who you're talking about. It's like there's at least three of them running around.
The Kree hero of old.
Yeah, it's tough because they just nothing is really permanent. It's whatever serves the immediate need of the story gets thrown in the mix.
Yeah, but it's interesting to think back, like, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, like, then something changed that really was not the normal thing, and now later we just accept it as being the thing.
Well, like, in the Ed Brubaker Captain America run, I think all of us, you know, deep in the comics nerds were, the shocking thing about that run was bringing Bucky back, but the thing that caught everyone's attention was killing Cap, and I think we all knew that Cap dying wasn't permanent, and the question mark was, is Bucky's return permanent? And it has been, and it's actually kind of worked. Like, he's integrated into the Marvel Universe.
Winter Soldier has been a great character.
Yeah.
You know, a great addition to the Marvel Universe in a way plays off of
other characters besides just Cap in really interesting ways.
Yes, right. Absolutely.
You've forced my hand now because the other email is exactly related to what we're talking about.
Oh.
Can't be done. We all have time. We're out of time.
It's just, well, we can read it and just mention it because it is almost exactly what we're talking about. So Jeff Reed, our old writer, our old colleague, wrote in and said, I remain puzzled by Jason Todd being alive. After his death, the character seemed to have a clear purpose to give Tim an example of how
I really was Robin, about to say this.
And Bruce, an example of how he is fallible. Now he just seems like another ex-Robin, but one with a giant chip on his shoulder. I don't see a reason for him to still be a character. Jason's now been resurrected for longer, 18 years, than he was dead, 17 years. So what am I missing? What post-resurrection stories haven't I read that will make me think, oh, now I get why he's back?
That is classic Jeff Reed
for 18 years. Comes with the stats, comes with the history.
So asking for a reading assignment.
What I was actually going to say, not even looking at that email, was that the Jason Todd resurrection was less successful.
Around the same time as Bucky.
Same day.
That said, I don't hate the Jason Todd resurrection because he is one of the, as an ex-Robin, he stands out as a unique character. And I think there have been some okay story. I don't hate when he shows up. It's not my favorite thing, but there was that a really good story in the Urban, was the anthology Batman book?
Yeah.
Rosenberg wrote it?
Yeah, Rosenberg wrote it. The Urban Legends? Batman Urban
Something
Legends?
Something like that. Yeah. That was a really good Jason Todd story. The problem with Jason Todd is that Winter Soldier arrives and he's fairly formed into the thing and he's always dealing with his past. Jason Todd keeps coming up against the idea of learning, and sometimes he learns from his mistake. He's like, I'm not going to shoot anyone anymore, but he keeps going back. Like, he can't. As soon as you evolve him, then he does become like the rest of the Robins.
Right. He's the angry Robin. That's the only thing that sets him apart.
Right. And the only way for him to grow is to be not quite as angry. And then it's like Josh said, he just melds with all the other Robins and there's something that sets him apart.
I think that's just a change that has basically won by attrition.
Mm-hmm.
Like we all just, it's been so long that we all just kind of went, all right, fine. Like it's just been like, I don't think anyone, I think when he first came back, it was an interesting story. You know, the red hood, who was the red hood? The reveal was shocking. Yeah. It was a good story, but ultimately when he shows up, he's just kind of like, all right, fine. And occasionally, and the stories can be fun and good. He plays off well against the other characters, but at the end of the day, I think it's just, they just beat us down. They won the war of attrition with us. Just be like, okay, he's been back.
Yeah, but it's also, it's not like, and I know we're talking about kids again, but it's not like Wally West's kids. We're like, oh God, just retcon this, make it go away. I don't hate, he's useful. In certain applications, he's okay.
I do think like what Jeff said was he was better as this symbol that was always lurking. Mm-hmm. You know, they used to always have that case with his suit in the back whenever Tim was having a problem or something, or Dick or Bruce was having an emotional crisis. Like it was always there to remind him of his failure, which is less of a thing
Bucky
when he's
didn't
running
really
around
serve
just
that
fine.
Role.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bucky kind of did. I mean, in the 80s, Steve was always, you know, lamenting that he failed Bucky.
Yeah. I guess. Yeah. He had Rick
Jones.
But
Steve lost that. It's like at a certain point, like the world sucked and they were like, you know what? Steve Rogers is just going to be the good guy.
Yeah.
And then Nick Spencer came along and we were like, let's forget that.
Well, he was always the good guy. Just like whenever they needed to remind him that you know, he would have flashbacks. Right, but he became, it wasn't to the extent of Bucky's suit constantly haunting him, but it was, you know.
He's well adjusted now, though.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, he's, I was about to say he doesn't have a book, but he does, but it wasn't. Yeah. Does and he? Almost like the Hydra thing sort of unwell adjusted him. Yeah. But I didn't, also just didn't buy it. So anyway, let's wrap this show up.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's a good question to think about. Like, what changes have stuck and why? It's interesting because ultimately anything can be unstuck, but also not always is the case because some things just you get saddled with forever. Contact@ifanboy.com is how Matt and Jeff wrote in. If you want to give them a media like show.
Sometimes you get settled with something forever. By the way, our website.
Contact@ifanboy.com that you can write in and get on the show. You can also get on our Media Splode show. Just put Media Splode in the subject line if you want to be on that one. Let's get out of here quick.
This 10-plus-year-old design's really holding up.
it's creaky, folks. It's creaky. We just had to pay a lot of money to fix a problem with it. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 review happened 3 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago was our Books Blowed on the Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, a novel. This week, this coming week, is going to be our Media Splode. We're supposed to be coming out last week. For dumb technical reasons, we had to push it to this week. So you'll see our Media Splode for May actually come out on June 1st, but that's just the way it is. And you also hear us talking about things that happened as if they were happening concurrently when it was 2 weeks ago, because we recorded it 2 weeks ago. But we're going to be talking about Return of the Jedi. It was the 40th anniversary. And so we spent about 40 plus minutes talking about Return of the Jedi, and it was awesome, the conversation. And then in 2 weeks, or I guess next week, whenever that is, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse comes out, and there will be a review of that. In 2 weeks. Or, yeah, 2 weeks. 2 weeks. 2 weeks. This is wrong. I'm tired. I'm hungover. 2 weeks is correct. 1 week is not correct. Ryan, how's your show going? Is it better than this? Because I need to go take a nap.
No, it's comparable.
It's comparable.
But, you know, it's fine. It's just.
Well, why don't
just
you plug the name out of the show and where people can find it and what you're.
It's called Science Sort Of. And then you can find it at sciencesort.com or wherever you get Science your sort podcasts. Of. ScienceSortOf.com. We tried a new format recently. We recorded like 20 minute, we called them short of episodes, and we came up with 20 different topics, and I rolled a D20 D&D style to see which topic we would talk about with no prep. So, you know, if you want to hear about like our thoughts
on hear about him making up a format so he doesn't have to do work ahead of time because he doesn't have time. Good news, everyone.
Believe it or not, this new format was not my idea, but I was accommodating a co-host, and I think it kind of worked. So look right. for those dropped into the regular feed wherever you get
that
your
sounds products. Like actually like that's a fun idea. I like that.
Yeah,
we could do that in a hangout. We could because, go with 20
because
topics
then you're like those. Because then you're like your listeners who are probably nerdy scientists themselves. Like, oh, you were wrong. And then they get to write in and feel like they're part of it.
There you go.
That's good. You can find our library of over 1,300 shows and counting over at ifanboy.com, wherever podcasts are available for you. There's many ways to listen to podcasts, many services, many apps, all those. I'm not going to tell you what they are. You can handle that part. We do the content. The rest of it, that's up to you.
These are the
you can
jokes.
Follow us at @ifanboycomics on Instagram. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out there. Sometimes you'll see the best of the week in panels. You can follow us individually. I am J.A. Flanagan. Connor is C.S. Kilpatrick. And Ryan is Ryan Haupt on Instagram. And Ryan, the lone holdout, is still
not
on
really.
Twitter at Haupt. Of people who I know specifically and talk to about it.
It's you and Ryan.
Of people
that's
on
it.
The show.
Cannot remember the last time I posted to Twitter. My plan is the next time I'm in San Francisco is to grab the building and auction it off with Lindsay's help.
Okay. I see.
Subscribe to youtube.com/ifanboy.
You really want to take over Twitter. That's what I learned.
That like seems like, yeah.
And then shut it down.
Subscribe to youtube.com/ifanboy where you'll find all of our old video shows. And we post this show there every week. And please consider leaving a review or star rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever podcasts are sold for not just this show, but any show you listen to, Science Sort Of, and any show. It really helps them, you know, helps the algorithm feed the beast and, you know, help people find the show. And that's really helpful for everyone. Thank you for listening. I'm going to now go lay down. And until then, I'm Connor.
I'm going to hope that Connor sends me the files to edit before laying down. But until then, I will be Ryan.
I got 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter. It's looking pretty good, but I'm going to go down and watch the rest of it.
Yeah, I think you got this one.
Don't never. I don't. I have seen this team blow it, and you'll know. By the time you listen to this, I mean, we're two games out, so. Well, don't worry about it. It'll be fine. Bye.
See you next week.
Bye. So what do
we
do?
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.